on average, 25% of work can be fully automated. And that's before we get into AI, like actual AI that we're seeing now. That's just RPA, robotic process.
Just RPA, robotic process automation. You're saying 25 to 30% right off the top of the bat.
Welcome to Embracing Digital Transformation, where we investigate effective change leveraging people, process, and technology.
This is Darren Pulsifer, Chief Solution Architect, author, and most importantly, your host. Michael, welcome to the show.
Darren, great to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, when we first talked, I wasn't quite sure where the conversation was going, and then it went exactly where I thought. And I thought, all right, we got to stop right there because we got to record this, right? Because this is a cool conversation. But before we jump into why you're on the show today, tell my audience who Michael Greenberg is and why you are doing what you're doing today.
Absolutely. So I started my whole career off by dropping out of college, going to a coding boot camp in Mountain View.
All right. If my kids are listening, don't do that. Don't drop out of college. Right. No, I'm just kidding, Michael.
Well, I think I probably had the worst timing possible with it, but joined a seed stage startup. We raised about $1.5 million. I got us to an MVP. Started building out some of the automation for sales. CEO made a product decision that was a terrible one based on our research. So I left, started consulting on my own, and eventually landed on opening up a podcasting agency when I saw transcription costs go from $1 a minute to 10 cents a minute because they had AI involved.
That's huge. That's huge.
You know, yeah. And that was... that was probably 7-8 years ago now. So that was
and now what's the cost now?
It is so low I don't think about it. But it's like a cent a minute or less for most.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, I think I told you this before, Michael. I do my podcast, my newscast in 6 different languages.
Yeah.
Right. And to do 6 different languages for a whole month is less than $5.
Okay, well, that...
And that's search. Voice. That's not just text. That's voice, too. The costs have driven so far down, it's amazing.
Yeah. I saw that, and I was like, okay, this is going to make podcasts the best sort of content you can make. Turned out, I think we both know I'm right.
I agree.
And... then sold that podcasting business, ended up working with a guy by the name of Jesse Pooji here in St. Louis, where I'm based. Worked with him for about 2 years at his venture studio, and then went out to start my current business.
So you're a serial entrepreneur is what I'm hearing.
I'm trying to be. I don't think I've lived enough to be able to claim that title yet.
But do you like the excitement? Do you like, I mean, because I've done 3 startups myself. There's energy, there's excitement, there's frustration, there's all those things.
Yeah. I think I might love the starting part a little too much. Many entrepreneurs, I fight the shiny object syndrome every day.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
But over time I've tried to build myself a business that allows me to explore that, outlet while maintaining on the right track.
So you saw 5 or 6 years ago, AI starting to carve into a well-established industry, translation services.
I would say gutted.
I
have a friend who owns a transcription business. They lost over 70% of their revenue. The only clients they have left are government and legal and medical.
That's brutal.
Yeah. They Netflix doesn't use a human to do captions anymore.
So this is amazing when you think about it, because this was pre-Gen AI.
Oh, this is some of the earliest AI that I can think of, at least. outside of maybe gaming.
Right. So that brings up a good question, maybe where we should start, is what are the impacts of AI on companies? This one company of your friends was completely gutted, 70% revenue down. What do you do? Do you pivot, or do you just ride it out until you're dead? What do you do?
He pivoted niche down on the types of clients that require it, that can't use AI. And I think he also started planning his exit. He knew that his business could probably be sold to somebody, but he wasn't sure if he was going to be able to get a multiple that would make it worthwhile. And I think ultimately when he shopped it, he realized, oh, this market is crushing so quickly that the smarter move is for me to just milk it dry.
To milk it dry. Well, so that's an interesting doomsday type of, right? When you think about it. Obviously he's going to shift into something else. You're going to do a cash cow on this business and pivot to something different. You've got to, right?
Yeah. And my guess is he was looking at buying an e-commerce business, buy an e-com company, turn it around. Very common for entrepreneurs, I think, especially on a second time or third time when they can find a proven product just with a bad operator.
If there's anything anyone takes out of this episode today, it's AI is here. You've got to pivot if your industry is in the crosshairs of an AI, right?
Yeah. And I think he's a very specific example where his business is built around a single rote task that AI can almost entirely replace. For most companies, most roles, you're looking at anywhere from 15 to 50%. On average, 25% of work can be fully automated. And that's before we get into AI, actual AI that we're seeing now. That's just RPA, robotic process.
Just RPA, robotic process automation. You're saying 25 to 30% right off the top of the bat.
Yeah.
With no process improvement, that's just take what I currently have and automate it with no optimization process, none of that.
Right. And that's before you implement something like Gen AI to add fuzzy logic or handle other steps, or standardize data so you can actually implement a robotic process. That's a huge one for us right now. I think you're looking at, in most cases, there's half of a role or 80% of a role is just, oh, I need to put these things in the right places so we can make some sort of decision or we can create something new. And almost all of that is going to get wiped out.
So if you're a person in that role in your company, you should be doing what? What should I do if I'm that person?
Learning how to make the decision better. I think we don't see companies downsizing as a result. We see companies not hiring as often.
So they're using normal attrition and not hiring as much.
Because there's still a lot of internal knowledge. It's very rare that you have somebody whose role is actually useless after you implement AI and automation. It's much more likely that they just have a narrow set of tasks. They might need to have their role changed. You're probably going to have a lot fewer junior designers inside of any organization or junior roles in general. You're going to have fewer juniors. You're going to want to hire better people. And those people are going to be making more important decisions sooner.
So that's interesting because now we've created a chasm, Right. Yeah. Think about it. If you need the subject matter experts, the guys with white hair like me, right? Or the guys that have been around a long time, or mid-tier or senior decision makers, yeah, to make these decisions with the help of an AI. But if you're not training up the next generation, then when I retire, who's going to take that role? Who's going to be making those decisions without any experience at all in making decisions?
So I think the answer is something more like an apprenticeship, in that that junior person probably is working with you earlier, because the junior, what becomes a junior role is really more like a manager of a bunch of AI. And so, like, inside of my team right now, when I assign a team member to go transfer a group of documents into a new database, that team member is probably not doing that by hand. They are creating some sort of automation or prompt that is taking information, reformatting it, and then putting it into the new system.
And as a manager or an owner of a business, that's what you want them to do. You want them to automate it, right?
Absolutely. And they know that is part of their job, because their job is not to just go back and copy paste. No, you can build a robot that copy pastes for you and knows when to stop. You should do that.
So why would you as a manager or an owner of a business want them to do that instead of just copy paste? Maybe I can get the copy paste done faster than the robot could do it.
You can't do it faster than the robot. Not at the, so there's like a, there's a scale of decision that I think, okay, and this is going, tying all the way back to like, what is the decision they have to actually learn? Is it 20 documents where it might only
200? Yeah,
exactly. Or 200,000 in some cases.
So if it's 20 documents, then a cut and paste, I'm just going to do that because programming a robot may take longer.
Yep.
But you may want them to program the robot anyway, because now I can use that in other places, right?
Right. We might know that, oh, this is actually something we have to do 20 times now, but we do it 20 times every month. And so then it becomes worth building that tool.
And that increases repeatability. Quality, all those sorts of things. Well, yep. I shouldn't say quality, but I am going to say quality, because quality is about predictability. If a bot is doing it, it's highly predictable. It's going to do the same thing every time.
Yeah.
Whether it's wrong or right, doesn't matter.
We talk about the three C's with clients. It's going to be consistent. It's going to be clear. And you're going to have confidence it's going to do the exact same thing every time.
Consistent, clear, and confident. I like that.
I used that same set of three C's all throughout. And that's sort of the overarching idea, is you need clarity in order to use generative AI effectively. If you don't have clear data, you can't use that data or manipulate it. Similarly, you can't automate a process if you don't have clarity in that process. And if you want consistency in your input-output pairs in either case, you need clarity first. So it really does go, clarity brings consistency, which brings confidence.
I really like this a lot. So what this tells me is some of the skills I need to learn, and my kids and the rising generation, is the ability to understand a process, understand data, so that now I can leverage AIs, whether generative or other algorithmic AIs, to do something valuable with that data to help me make a business decision. That's what I'm hearing. Yeah. Is that right?
Yeah. I think the core skills of like change management, digital transformation at the strategic level, nothing has changed. The specific tactics and tools we use have changed a little bit, but really, like, the best way to think of AI, in my opinion, at this point in this current generation, where on GPT-4 at the time of recording, call it 4.5,
yeah,
with the newest update, Claude 3, Gemini 1.5. So we're just in like halfway through the first generation. Right now, I think of AI as really only useful to improve fuzzy logic in something we're already 70 or 80% of the way to robotic automation with. It's inside of an existing process.
So you like to use Gen AI to help with robotic process automation that is difficult, has too many conditions or rule, right? Where decisions need to be somewhat made, or not decisions. I need context in order to help make better decisions. That's kind of what I'm hearing.
And I'd say it's not, we use automation as a broad term to encompass both RPA, robotic process automation, and data automation, which is quickly becoming the easier and faster deployment.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Whenever I can, I would rather just have digitized data, and then we don't have to track the clicks everywhere. And we can just say, okay, API, pull this, Claude, manipulate data this way. And then
give it to me back in this format. No, I do that myself with my podcast. I've automated a lot of my, the steps that I have to do. And you're right. The ones that I find the most frustrating, it was where there's no API.
And that's, so I've got a client in a government contracting right now, and we're mapping out, so like the proposal process, because they might have an RFP.
What a nightmare.
6 to 12 months. And you know, there's going to be posts and updates about it in 5 different places. Right now they have a woman, her job is, she spends 2 hours a day checking all of those places and then updating the CRM. And this is a combination of RPA and data automation, where the RPA has to actually go through the login process and scrape the data, but then transfers to JSON. We've got a nice data payload, and suddenly data automation kicks in. The large language model goes in. GPT-4 says, is this related to one of our projects or not? And goes down the entire list. And that's, you know, that's going to save them 10 hours a week.
That's substantial.
That's
a quarter of someone's time.
Pretty highly paid employee based out of DC. Like that's, that's probably going to save them 25 or 30,000 a year just off the bat.
And that's just one person, right? I mean, that's impressive.
That's the thing. The reason I really love it is because that's just time savings. We know there's going to be secondary benefits from consistency, from not missing things, that are going to turn into more money for the company and more revenue. And then eventually the AI is going to be able to, and this is one thing we're working with them to plan out now. It's a little too early, but eventually we're going to fine tune a model for them. And then the AI is going to be able to automatically update their project proposals and RFPs based on the updates that come in through this.
That's going to really change, because I've been on some of those long proposals. It's like a slog.
Yeah.
And then anytime you get an update, it's like, oh gosh, now I got to go change. And you got to all fit it in into a certain number of pages. And so you're constantly manipulating the document to, oh, well, we want to emphasize this more than this. And so do you think these documents are going to be generated? I think so, by AIs.
Yeah.
Do you think they'll also be summarized and evaluated by AIs too? So are we just having AIs write proposals and AIs evaluate, and then a person say, you know, take this 1,000-page document or 20-page document, and does it meet this criteria that I established? And then it spits out an answer.
So I'm going to make a bit of a political joke.
Okay.
Answer your question. That's how our laws get made and our budgets get passed right now, but we don't use AI, we use staffers.
You are absolutely right. That's exactly what we do. Yeah, we use staffers.
To answer your question, yes, 100%. But there might be two staffers that are the humans in the loop approving and reviewing instead of
100.
Yeah, or 100 doing all that summarization.
So if I'm a person that just summarizes documents, I should be understanding how AI works and using AI, because that's the only way I'm going to elevate myself above my peers that are going to have to find a different way to do their work.
Yeah.
They're going to have to find new jobs.
One person is going to be the best summarizer, and that's the one person that's going to get to keep their job, because they're still going to be better than an AI. But like in podcast show notes, the little summary of the episode, I've seen, that's one of the, like, you can find Reddit posts of people being like, I went from making $10,000 a month to I now have no clients because they all switched to one of these tools.
Well, that happened to me. And so I used to have a friend of mine, and she used to take my podcasts, listen to them, and then she used to transcribe them for me. She used a service that transcribed it, and then she'd write a summary. And I had her doing that for about a year, and then AI came around, and my budget was tight, so I said, I'm going to give this a try, and it only took a month. It took 4 episodes, and I was hooked.
Yep.
And yeah, it's a, so you're right. It has changed.
I will say, though, I have a team member who, his whole job is just to make like content workflows with AI. I hired him because he was a freelancer at OpenAI, helping them just do training data, real boring rote work.
Right.
But that is probably one of the most valuable skill sets you can start with if you want to get like really good at AI and prompts, is knowing how to input the data for training an AI into input-output pairs.
You know, you hit that on the nose, because that skill, it is mundane. But once you've been doing it for some time now, you can write prompts like crazy because you know what's going on inside the model.
And I think when I look at like, what is a skill that only a human can do? Creating the data set for an AI is a skill we already know only a human can do, because we have seen the results where AI degrade when they are trained on AI generated data.
Yeah.
We know this to be true now, at least with the current generation of models.
Yeah, you hit a very good point. So we still are in control. The AIs have not taken over yet. That's what I'm hearing, Michael.
We just have to become more managers and less doers in a lot of these rote tasks.
So I get you 100%. And I've done a lot of work on myself to get rid of some of that rote stuff. Hey, thank you, Michael, for your insight. Stay tuned for next episode, where I continue my interview with Michael Greenberg on how generative AI is changing the landscape of small and mid-sized companies. Thank you for listening to Embracing Digital Transformation today. If you enjoyed our podcast, give it 5 stars on your favorite podcasting site or YouTube channel. You can find out more information about Embracing Digital Transformation at embracingdigital.org. Until next time, go out and embrace the digital revolution.